You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world every weekday. It is Thursday, October the 15th, just 48 hours until Britain's most valuable race day, British Champions Day at Ascot, and the weather has definitely taken a turn for the better. It has been another extraordinary season for Holly Doyle, the preeminent female rider of her generation and one of the preeminent riders of either gender. She set another milestone in what's been an extraordinary season as she broke her own British record for the most winners in a calendar year by a female jockey at Kempton Park last night. With 117 this calendar year, she is only 8 behind the leader, Ashine Murphy, and surely one day will take home the champion jockey's title. On Saturday at Ascot, she may well reach another landmark because she has two fancied rides in big Group 1 races, Glen Sheil in the sprint and Dan Mayo in the fillies and mares. The man who trains Dan Mayo is the soon-to-retire from UK racing, Ed Vaughan, who will be talking to me very shortly. But first of all, David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror, is with me today. Dave, what sets Holly Doyle apart?
Right. I mean, I think Holly Doyle is, to say this first, I think Holly Doyle is the best of the female jockeys that we've seen so far. Number stories, Nick, normally send me to sleep, particularly when they're 100, 200, you know, I don't really find them very interesting. The goalposts are always moving in racing and in sport. Look at Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton this weekend, 91 Grand Prix each. But there are so many more Grand Prix these days than there were when Schumacher was driving. However, there is an element to the number stories with Holly Doyle that's not only informative, but it's also quite interesting. On the 11th of September, Holly Doyle broke her own record for 100 winners in a season. Now, because it was the St. Ledger the next day, the feat was achieved at Sandown, it got lost in the fog slightly. But let's just look at that in the context of other female riders. Well, her own record from 2019 was on the 21st of November. Josephine Gordon at the landmark on the 5th of November. And back in 2008, when Mullet Over Morris won at Wolverhampton for Hayley Turner, it was the 30th of December. Remember that we were thinking, will she, won't she? Well, she probably will. But in the end, she did. But for between 2019 and 2020, Holly Doyle smashed her own record by 71 days, and that's in a season that's had the guts ripped out of it by COVID-19. There are hardly any jockeys who are established jockeys, who are matching their previous totals. Those winners have been ridden for loads of different trainers. They include a Group 2 win on Dame Malio, who, of course, is running at Ascot on Saturday. A second was on Glen Sheil at Haydock in the Sprint Cup. That horse is very much a contender for honours at Ascot in the Champion Sprint. And so what this tells us is that she's going places and going places very quickly.
That she is, and as Dave says, that Group 1 win could come sooner rather than later. Dan Mayo looks to have an outstanding chance in the Kipco Fillies and Mares race on Saturday. Her trainer is Ed Vaughan. I've been speaking to him. I began by asking him what sort of kick it would give him to give Holly Doyle her first Group 1 success.
Oh, it would be fantastic. You know, I think we gave her a first... I don't think we gave her a first stakes winner, but certainly her first Group winner was on this filly. And she's made remarkable progress in the last 2 years, really, hasn't she? She gets on well, and she's worked very hard. She deserves it.
She's got a great record for you from relatively limited opportunities. What do you think makes her good?
I just think, you know what, she doesn't actually interfere with horses and try to take them back. She horses relax in her hands. You know, I said it to her before, that she'd do very well in America, you know, her style of riding. where they go, you know, through gallop from the gate. And I just think she's good. She's got great balance. She rides with a good length of rein, and horses just seem to run for her.
It would be a bit of a fairy tale Group 1 win for her, but it would be a fairy tale farewell to English racing for you if you were to bow out with a Group 1 with this filly. What will your emotions be like at Ascot on Saturday, do you think?
I don't know, Nick. You'd have to, I suppose, it would have to happen before you can say. You just don't know how you'd react. But I wouldn't say I'd be the most emotional person in the world. Normally it takes a peeling an onion to bring a tear to my eye, but this might do. Who knows?
Any plans? Have you got any plans of what you're going to do now?
Yeah, we've got a few things in the pipeline. I'm not going to say any more at the moment, but there are a few little things that might come to fruition. But hopefully I'll know more in probably 3 or 4 weeks.
But you are sticking to your plan, which is to saddle your last runners in the UK at any rate during the calendar year 2020.
Yes, we've got what 2 weeks left, so end of October we're pretty much done.
And no regrets about the decision?
No, absolutely not, no.
And genuinely, what chance do you think Dan Mayo has got of giving you this Group 1 win on Saturday? She appears to have a pretty decent chance according to the market. She's had a great season. Is she still improving?
Improving. Well, she's a latter-end four-year-old. I don't want to say she's improving, but I mean, her run in the Vermeer was very good. The form of that has worked out incredibly well. The filly that just pipped us for second on the line. She ran really well in the arc. She finished fifth, beaten 4.5 lengths. And the winner obviously won the Opera. David Menissier's filly. She looks a really progressive filly. She finished just behind us that day, and she's gone on. She won the Royal A. And there was another filly of the Aga Khan's, I think it was, and she won a Group 2 on Arc weekend. So the form is very strong.
And as far as the conditions, you think that's all fine for you?
It's not ideal, but I suppose it'll inconvenience others just as much. You know, she did win on heavy. It was horrible, tacky ground. She won her Group 2 in Deauville last year. You don't really know. I mean, look, she's won on soft ground. At least we're taking some comfort in that. But it will be very testing there.
Good luck, Ed. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Ed Vaughan there, and no doubting the popularity of a victory for Dan Mayo. Another horse who would raise the roof would be Pile Driver, this rags-to-riches story, who represents trainer William Muir and jockey Martin Dwyer in the Kipco British Champion Stakes. I've been talking to the trainer, and I began by asking him how this horse, coming back half a furlong in distance, had been training since his brave run in the St Ledger.
Well, he's been absolutely superb all year, Nick. He's never sort of had any sort of change in the way he does things, and that's what you look for at this time of year. If all of a sudden you see a horse do an absolute startling piece of work, you go, oh, he's never been better, and you find they've normally gone over the top. He's just worked exactly the same. Every day's the same. He's relaxed, he's in a great way, and yeah, he's in a great place.
Have you done anything different with him? Have you changed his training regimen because you're moving around in distance or not?
No, I think if we were to have done that, we'd have had to have done it for going farther, and that race came upon us fairly quickly. I mean, no, he's a very fit horse. You wouldn't want to change his routine at this time of his season, because if you did, you would probably take the edge away from him.
Stamina-wise, do you think it was simply not getting the trip that got him beaten at Doncaster?
I think you couldn't absolutely say he didn't stay, because he finished third in a classic, which is a fantastic feat. But when Martin rode him and he came back in the Voltigeur, and the Matt put the commentator put the thing under his nose straight after he pulled up, or Richie, what do you think of the St Ledger? He said, I'd rather go back to a minor quarter. This horse has got gears. And the first thing he came back in the Ledger, and he said, I was on empty the last furlong and a half. And he was wandering because he's not empty, but he's so much guts, he puts his head down and tries.
We know that he handles digging the ground. He proved that at York. We know that he's got the speed fundamentally for a mile and a quarter. It's a question of whether he's got the pace and class for it against this calibre of opposition. So that's where you come in and tell us, well, yes, I think he's up to it, or I'm not quite sure yet.
No, I think he'll travel through the race. You'll see the race will suit him because of the pace of the race. He'll get into his rhythm. And then when you turn in, it'll be a class of, have we got the gears to go with these absolute older superstars?
What's your instinct?
I think we will.
I know you've got massive faith in this horse, and it's been borne out more than once this season. When we spoke earlier in the year and you came on my Racing TV programme, you were saying that it had made a bit of a difference and people were showing a bit more of an interest in having a few more horses. You're at the sales this week. Has that manifested itself in some orders?
Not really. Of course, my owners have been fantastic. My old owners, they've been with me a long time. They've reinvested. I was fortunate enough. The owners had Pile Driver's brother in the sale, which they put a reserve price on and he didn't make it. So I've lucky enough, I've got him to train next year.
That's great news.
So that's a big, big thing. And I bought four new ones. And I've got to go back now and put the owners into place and see where we go. I bought two or three absolute super horses, which would have cost me probably double last year. So yeah, I'm very, very pleased. I'm sure I'm not going to have any problem putting people together, but if anybody wants to ring me quickly, I've got them there.
There you go. Excellent. I'm really hoping that someone listens to this and picks up the phone straight away. Because
I have got things sort of under control, but as I say, if somebody would like to come, I have bought four cracking horses.
William Muir there. Good luck to him with Pile Driver. Dave Yates still with me. Dave, some very good stories beyond the obvious building for Champions Day.
Yeah, the difficulty that the organisers have with Champions Day is that the big stories don't really emerge until the week itself, or even the end of the week itself. You know, you and I were talking about, for instance, the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. Now, if you and I had been doing the marketing for that, then we would have known weeks and weeks ago that the main story would have been a history for Enable, but there was this pesky classic winner called Love standing in her way. And we could have done all our marketing on that basis weeks before, even though, of course, Love didn't run. If Holly Doyle wins one of those races, either the champion sprints on Glenshiel or the fillies and mares on Dam Mayo, then I think most journalists will hardly bother watching the QE2 or the Champion Stakes, because that will be the big story. However, if she doesn't, then certainly Pile Driver would be a really popular winner and a good story. The way that he travels over a mile and a half suggests, if anything, that 10 could suit him even better than an extended mile and three quarters. And of course, he's made the podium in a British Classic. So it's not only is it an interesting story for Pile Driver and a warming one it would be for his connections, but it's also an outcome that doesn't take a huge leap of faith to find it. I think that Pile Driver is very much a player given a testing 10 furlongs at Ascot, which we know it's going to be.
One horse who won't make British Champions Day is Cameco. He goes to the Breeders' Cup Mile instead, where they will be hoping for dry weather at Keeneland in November.
Yeah, that's not a massive surprise. Yesterday it was, we would say in the papers, confirmed rather than revealed. Earlier in the week, David Redvers had said that the likelihood of soft ground at Ascot would mean that Cameco wouldn't run in the QE2. And so they put the confirmation on that yesterday. It seems that certainly that Joel Stakes carrying the penalty to victory at Newmarket was gained on rain softened ground, but it's not going to be the terrain like the terrain that Ascot will serve up on Saturday. So not a huge surprise, and interesting to see the horse at the Breeders' Cup.
Palace Pier will be Frankie Dettori's mount in that race and will go off a very short price favourite. Dettori also rides Mishriff in the Champion Stakes. We discussed briefly here with Cornelius yesterday the fact that Dettori would ride Mishriff in preference to the owner's retained rider, David Egan. Do you have anything to add on that, Dave?
David Egan gave an interview yesterday on Sky Sports Racing at Bath where he said the right things. He said, I've been jocked off by the best in the business. These things happen. I'm happy with my arrangement with the owner, Prince Faisal, and you know that I'll have good days to come on this horse. I think that you know, it's obviously a very disappointing thing for a young jockey when you are replaced by a bigger name. But I would say to David Egan, and I didn't really get the opportunity, well, I didn't get the opportunity to ring him yesterday, but I would have said, just cast your mind back to May, when another rising star jockey was replaced on a big name horse, again by Frankie Dettori. That was English King. And at the time we were saying to Tom Marcon, you know, sorry about this. And again, he said the right things. Then fast forward to September. And of course, he's the one who is riding Galileo Crow to victory. I think from which David Egan can take comfort. I'm sure in years to come, he'll be the one who's jockeying off the rising stars.
Let's talk about the lockdown, because the regulations are tightening all the time. London has just gone into tier 2 lockdown, and doubtless this will spread throughout much of the south of England as it is in the north. Tier 3 at the moment, there's a possibility of a circuit break coming, again discussed yesterday. Now, as we talked about, the racing can go ahead behind closed doors, even in the event of an almost total lockdown. But that reckons without the possible intervention of individual local health bodies, public health authorities.
Yes, indeed. And that's the key, really, that they still hold the power to prevent meetings from taking place. I hope that doesn't happen. And one person who certainly will have that sentiment in spades is Gordon Elliott, because, of course, Dan Royal has its Champion Chase meeting. What is that, on the 30th and 31st of October? Gordon Elliott will put in plenty of his big names,
including, of course, Envoi Alain.
Yes, provided that the local people play ball, meetings can still go ahead, and Dan Royal will certainly have their fingers crossed that proceeds as scheduled, because that's going to be a really informative meeting. It's not just the Champion Chase these days, with the support of the big yards there, not only in Ireland but also in the UK too. That's become a very significant meeting.
And one place that was completely insulated, it seems, from the effects of COVID yesterday was the Tattersall's Book 2 sale. Over 48 million guineas, and just fractionally shy of last year's record, a clearance rate of 85%. I'm grateful to Bloodstock journalist Emma Berry for these statistics. As she says, to think over 128 million has been spent in 6 days of sales this year is nothing short of extraordinary, and she's absolutely right.
It is extraordinary. Once again, I think that in the past few weeks, we've spoken about how the sales are a barometer with regard to how badly COVID-19 has hit owners and the horses that they will keep in training in the future. Again, we said with Book 1 that this wasn't much of a barometer, and I think probably the same is true of Book 2. There was a lot of money spent. It held up extremely well, as you pointed out. But I think that the real guide will be when people from, if I can say this, real financial backgrounds start choosing whether to spend their cash or whether to keep it in their pockets. That will be made clearer and clearer over the coming weeks. I don't think we should start patting ourselves on the back yet, on the back of the sales of Book 1 and Book 2 at Tattersall's.
Still an absorbing week at Tattersall's, as it will be through the remainder of sales season. And don't forget to look out for the progeny of Oscar Performance by Kitten's Joy out of the theatrical mare Divine Actress, a Grade 1 winner at 2, 3 and 4. And at 4, Oscar Performance also set the world record at 1 mile on the turf at Belmont Park in 1:31.23. He won all his races without any race day medication, and his first foals will be presented in the November breeding stock sales. They are still at Tattersall's in Newmarket this week. Now for Book 3. But reflecting on Book 2 now, with Harry Herbert, who's been restocking for his high-end syndicate, High Clear Thoroughbred Racing. And I began by asking Harry just to cast a reflection on the sale as someone who was bang slap in the middle of the market and trying to get yearlings.
It's been incredibly difficult, Nick. I mean, it's never easy. I think probably folks think you have a bit of money, go to the sales and buy horses. It's really difficult, in fact. And you're right by saying sort of in the middle of the market, you're sort of almost in no man's land. I mean, you know, for horses fall through the net, but you've got to do all the work and all the preparation. And when you're blown out, you know, time and time again, it's incredibly sort of mentally stressful, and you think, crikey, I thought there was meant to be a, you know,
a market in free fall here, and this is far from it. And it was really tough, but yeah, we got there in the end. But it's been yeah, very difficult few days.
I want to talk about your syndicates and about how you're managing moving forward in a few moments' time. But as a seasoned market analyst, if you like, how do you read this week? How do you try and explain it? Just fill in a bit of detail for people who aren't really aware.
Well, I think that the market itself has been really buoyed, of course, by the Maktoum family, who have continued to, you know, to spend, you know, significant sums, and other Middle Eastern money as well. And I think it's the sort of the, I did, probably maybe folks didn't expect the quantity, perhaps, of horses that they were going to buy or have bought. But, you know, you've got to have an underbidder, and there's plenty of folks out there. There's my nephew Jake Warren, who not just buy for Heike, buys for other clients, and I mean, lost count how many times he was underbidder. Virtually always, you know, to Anthony Stroud or to Angus Gold or, you know, one of those team. And so it's led by the Maktoums, but there is still a, you know, strength under there. And in our level, where we're trying to buy at an average of, say, you know, around, well, just under 100,000 a horse, you know, you'd want to, you know, find yourself in territory that was pretty scary, because in a matter of two or three bids, you know, the yearlings, shortlisted yearlings, were gone and beyond us.
So, Harry, High Clear Thoroughbreds, everyone's familiar with your MO. You're a high-end syndicate, and as much as anything else, as much as trying to race good horses, and you've had plenty of them, it's a social experience. So, for you, how's it been managing this year?
It's been very difficult. I mean, lockdown's obviously a horror story for everybody. And for those who have, you know, an investment in fun by owning racehorses, it was a very difficult time. And we went from no racing to obviously racing without owners. And so as far as initially with Highclere, what we were doing was we're talking loads and loads to our share owners. You know, our communication is everything. It's not just about emails, obviously. So we chatted away, and then I started putting together things like sort of trip down memory lane videos, because I thought it might be sort of quite a worthwhile exercise to go back over some of the sort of Highclere, you know, the big moments of the past, and actually tell the story to camera with Clodagh filming me, and then putting on the, you know, actually showing the race or races of the horses. And when I started doing this, it was extraordinary how, you know, have the sort of a wonderful reaction from all of our owners, who just wanted, you know, who wanted more. And I think, well, you know, the formula, so often you take it for granted, you know, these wonderful horses come and go and you move on and you're trying to find the next one. And it's only when you look back and you think, oh my goodness, do you remember how we bought that horse, where we were, and then the journey that horse takes you on. You know, for lockdown, it was for me, it was, you know, going back over those moments and getting them out to share owners and trying to stay properly engaged all the time. And then, of course, we, you know, as you know, we got onto the some owners being able to go. We could do stable visits, and we accelerated our stable visits, and the trainers have been fantastic on that front. So, it's far from a normal year, but we've tried to stay as engaged as possible.
And of course, one of the great features of your year is your yearling parade, where you show people potential horses they might get involved with, and that's going to take place this Sunday. But like all of the rest of us, you're taking that virtual.
Yes, we're doing our first ever, I think this is the 28th year of the parade for Highclere, and it will be very strange not having that wonderful moment, you know, of the Sunday of people arriving. Normally we'd have 250 people a day over 3 days, and, you know, a covered grandstand, a parade of the horses, and then you know, big marquee and lunch and stuff. And it's, you know, it creates great atmosphere and excitement and buzz. You know, it's a wonderful event. But this year, you're absolutely right, we can't do that. So we are having a live stream parade, which will be open to everybody. That will be Jake and I talking about the horses as we would normally do, the horses parading in the yard at Highclere. And a number of our trainers will be there also, you know, talking about the horses and, giving some commentary as well. So it'll, you know, we'll do our best. We've got a proper professional company coming in to do the technical side of it. And we hope that as many people as possible, not just our share owners, but others who might just want to tune in and see what we do and you know, have a look at some really beautiful horses that Jake Warren has brought us. And he really has done an extraordinary job in a difficult time.
Harry, thanks so much. Best of luck this weekend.
Thanks, Nick, so much. Thank you.
Well, my thanks to Harry Herbert, to William Muir and to Ed Vaughan. Best of luck with them with their chances on Kipco British Champions Day. Dave Yates still with me to send us home with a winner.
Right, we go to Southall for the 7:45. It's number 2, Excellente. This horse made his Fibersand debut a week ago. That was over 7, was just beaten a nose, but came home with gusto up to a mile here. And off the same mark, I think Excellente has Excellente prospects of going one better. 7:45 at Southall selects number 2, Excellente.
Dave, thanks very much. Thank you for listening as well. Don't forget to join us tomorrow. That was Thursday, October the 15th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.